So I'm Rick Hansen, and this is January 4th, 2012. And I'd like to talk about receiving and releasing as a setup for the new year. And often I have a pretty clear idea in my mind when I give a Dharma talk what I'm trying to do. And tonight it's a little more kind of exploratory for me, because partly for me this is an ongoing investigation or consideration myself. So you're getting me kind of live, unedited, from San Rafael, not New York, talking about this topic. And I hope to do a little bit of a opportunity to, if you're interested in this, finding a partner a little bit later on and just talking with your partner a bit about this. So what do I mean by releasing and receiving? I first was educated about this fundamental rhythm in reality by one of my major spiritual teachers, who's no longer alive, Adi Da, Lovananda Da Frijan. That was a kind of a significant chapter of my life, probably 5 pretty intense years with some less intense years around it. And he talked about doing, for example, this fundamental practice of releasing ego, releasing the contraction of the self, or releasing craving, releasing anger, releasing attachment. And since his teachings were in a theistic frame, he would talk about releasing it out into the divine, which for him was not the classic Judeo-Christian creator God, as it were, but more the ground of everything, infusing everything. You don't have to relate to that part, but it's the act of releasing. And then when the space is cleared, then receiving. So releasing out, receiving, exhaling, inhaling, giving, getting, right? It's a fundamental rhythm, isn't it, in life? We can experience it over the course of a single breath. Or maybe we experience it over a longer period of time with children who grow up and leave home. We receive their love and we release their active engagement in our life. Or we release reactivity to our kids or to our partner about raising the kids, if we do that with a partner, and then we receive insight or comfort or support or forgiveness to ourselves or to others. See the rhythm there? Get releasing and receiving. And it's interesting to reflect on this in a couple of ways. I think it is, at least for me, interesting or valuable. One is that from, in a sense, the Buddhist perspective, which is also, you could say, the modern physics perspective, the distinction between receiving and releasing is really subtle. It's really all flow, There's flow around receiving, there's flow around releasing. It's kind of a continuous process. And when we explore that, for example, around something as simple as breathing, there's something almost jarring. I don't know if you noticed it. So going from focusing on inhaling as receiving and then shifting gears into focusing on exhaling as releasing and then shifting gears back, within a second or a few seconds to focusing on inhaling as receiving, it's kind of jarring. But fairly soon, there just starts to become a kind of sense of flow. Moments flowing into each other, receiving, flowing into releasing, and so on. First point. Second, I don't know about you, but I've experienced resistance or difficulty or craving, which leads to suffering, on both of those rhythms. Resistance to receiving, to just kind of opening, softening, lowering the guard, letting in, allowing, letting be. Anybody else have any little grit, maybe around that, right? That's worth really looking at then, right? Because that's an impediment to in ordinary ways, to really relaxing and getting all that there is to get in life. And also, again, from that Buddhist perspective, when we are aversive, which is often the case with regard to receiving. We don't like what we're receiving, or we're afraid in some subtle way that if we truly soften and open, we'll be overrun, we'll be invaded, the person in our life will do what our big sister or father or what have you did, and somehow overrun our boundaries, right? Things like that come up, as well as, you know, kind of subtler versions of that. So people can have impediments around receiving. Okay. Another impediment around receiving is the belief that I don't deserve this good thing. That too is an impediment around receiving. Or this love is not for me. Or I don't deserve your attention. Or I don't deserve good treatment. So we inhibit our assertiveness around what we could and should receive. But we have issues around receiving, right? So too, I have issues around releasing. And think of the many forms of releasing. Giving, generosity. In the Buddhist frame, dana, the practice of generosity. Tangible and intangible is a mode of releasing, broadly defined. I'm writing, speaking of just one things, and these, I call them JOTS as an acronym. The one I'm doing now, and it'll come out tomorrow, I think, is called Make the Offering, which for me is a very appropriate one to start the new year, and it's kind of in the flow of the last two that I've done. The one before it was Admit Fault and Move On, and the one just the most previous one was Stop Beating Up Yourself, which then kind of clears the space for making the offering. Making the offering is a form of releasing. We all have forms of contribution in us, and many of us, in one way or another, have them a little bit dammed up, a little bit bottlenecked. And releasing involves letting that dam burst, letting that bottleneck pop, popping the cork, so that which is in our heart and in our minds and in our hands and in our body to give out into the world, to contribute into the world, can flow in ways small and large. And oftentimes we have fears about that or resistances to that or even unconscious just rules or inhibitions about I couldn't do that, when in fact we really can, right? So we can have issues about both receiving and releasing. And sometimes we have, so around that, and maybe this is a bit of a segue. Actually, I'll see if you have a comment or question first. But around that, sometimes when we look at a new year, which of course is fundamentally arbitrary, and there are many kinds of new years, right? The Jewish New Year, the Chinese New Year, and so forth. Okay, that said, you know, it's a marker day. And so as we look forward into the new year, it could be that we know in our heart maybe there's something that we'd really like to receive more of or be more open to, right? And maybe relax some control around. That's one for me. I realized that one of the obstructions for me to receiving was my felt need to kind of manage so many particles and tasks and to-dos and relationships and emails and, you know, commitments and wishes, whatever. You know, pieces of property, whatever. And, you know, there's something about needing to exercise a certain level of top-down control over every bit of that that obstructs, you know, letting just the waves, you know, keep moving through, whatever that is. So maybe there's some insight in you about that which you'd like to receive in particular, or bring some intention to. You know, I'm working through just a marvelous book now. Working's the wrong word. I'm reading it. It's very easy to read. It's very deep. It's called What the Buddha Thought by a leading Buddhist scholar at Oxford, Richard Gombrich. It's very readable, What the Buddha Thought. And one of his points is how much the Buddha focused on intention, the importance of intention. Intention is the primary determinant of karma, consequences in this life for sure, and perhaps in other lives as well. Intention. So what might be, so I'm opening up a question here, what might be an intention for you with regard to receiving, moving into the new year? And also, what might be an intention for you with regard to releasing, in the very broad way I'm talking about it. Letting go, contributing, offering, moving on from, saying goodbye to, and so forth. So before we go into any, to the opportunity, if you'd like to talk about this for a bit with a partner, is there any question or comment so far about what I've said? Great.
When you talk about receiving, I have a little bit of a problem understanding that. And I can understand it like on a metaphysical sort of way. But in terms of real life, would you include something like I'm looking for a job? You could say after a while, you know, you start feeling bad. Oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not, you know, qualified enough. You know, that's just one example. But would you include that in what you're saying in terms of receiving?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Would I include something concrete that we wish for, like love, or a true partner of the heart, or a job, or health insurance? Who knew? I would totally, if that's in your wish, I think that's okay. And it's really, I don't think it's un-Buddhist to wish for wholesome things. I mean, he had a long list of things that he considered that were wholesome to have intentions for. You know,
and I change that. I mean, how would you receive? How would you, you know, it's metaphysical thing to be open to receiving, but something like love or a friendship or a job is a real thing.
Yeah.
How would you change your ways to make that happen?
Yeah, I think what you're clarifying is some of what we receive is present. It's actual, right? Like when you began to speak, I just kind of watched me receiving you. In that moment when, I mean, it's very intimate. It can become abstract. I encourage you to really bring it down. You know, the next person you look at in the eyes, are you willing to take that extra heartbeat or breath to actually fully receive them even more than kind of a baseline? Like little things like that, right? Or can we receive feedback and or criticism and make sense of it without reacting? I think, you know, can we receive events that are like being stuck in traffic, can we receive those and let them flow through? So those are actual. Then there's the category where they're the things we wish for, we wish to receive. And that's, so I'm just, I think you're making a very good distinction there. With regard to that, I think that it's perfectly appropriate to look and see, is there anything in me that is an obstruction to that coming in? Both material, for sure. And if it's meaningful for you in a kind of psychological, intentional, perhaps even metaphysical sense, is there any obstruction to the receiving of that which I would really like to evoke or invite into my life? And then can I release that obstruction so as to receive it? And meanwhile, can I receive well-being even without having this wish yet realized? We would do practices with Adi Da where we would really, in a very vivid sense, really imagine that which we wanted to receive and be very sensitive to. If you imagine the thing that's not yet actual you'd like to receive, and you're mindful, remember mindfulness, really important, foundational skill, you can detect in yourself an obstruction to that which you want to receive, right? One part of you wants to receive it. Another part is obstructing it a little bit, sometimes. Okay. Maybe another person or two, question or comment, then we'll do a paired thing, yeah.
So could you then unpack letting go or releasing a little bit? Is it, in my mind, I feel like it's like taking responsibility or, in other words, changing my response. That's one way I take it, but, you know, somebody just says, oh, let it go. I'm like, okay, how do I do that? You know?
Well, great. So how to let go, or what does that actually mean? And
yeah,
the way I'm...
When you said take it in and release it, what do you actually do?
Oh, okay. So let's talk about different kinds of releasing. One is just simply releasing tension in the body. We're chronically tense. We're vigilant, paranoid animals, right, who brace and guard. And minimally, there's a kind of releasing there. Releasing upset, right? Releasing a kind of holding on. You know, the Buddha talked about four attachments that drive suffering, right? Attachment to sense pleasures, subtle and not, and you know, very palpable. Attachment to view, that's a big one to release. Attachment to rites and rituals, or the modern update would be routines. And then four, releasing that ego I, me, myself, and I, selfing. So that would be a kind of thing to release. And well, when one does that, I think there's a kind of relaxing around it, a softening around it, a willingness to tolerate what might happen if we let that thing go, if we disidentify from it, if we hold it in a larger context, like a context of awareness, we see it in a bigger picture. We realize that those things that, for example, for us are imperatives and verities, truths, to other people are not givens at all. Many of the things that for us are given, for others are not given at all. You know, and looking at the world or ourselves through their eyes can help us all also release, unpack, for example. That would be in the context of releasing things that might be problematic, right? And I'm also using this word very broadly, releasing, to include offering things that are positive, that are contributive, that are beneficial, offering benefit, both those things. Releasing grievances.
So it's basically being mindful of what it is and saying, I see it, I'm not going to react to it. I'm going to have a different response, basically. I mean, that's the mechanics of it.
I think that would be one kind of aspect of releasing. I think there you're talking more, in a sense, about equanimity. Mm-hmm. Here I'm really focusing on flow. You know, flowing in, we're flow. We're, again, Buddhist / quantum physics frame, there are no things, they're only events. No things, only events. Wow. Like, that's an event, you know. That's an event. What? You know? But, yeah, you start to sense that it's more about flow. That's generally what I'm talking about. But when I think about, you know, let's say I came home yesterday from a day of work. I walked into my house, and our 24-year-old and 21-year-old son and daughter were there in the kitchen and talking with each other. And I walked in, you said my usual, hello, my dad, hello. So I walk in the house, and there was no response. And it was really curious. They completely ignored me. And I felt actually really centered, which was good, and not so I could do this. And I deliberately just sat down near them and just kind of quietly hung in the space to see what would happen. And so one thing I released, let's say, would be my kind of habitual, scripted, ritualized dad response to disrespect, or a younger response to narcissistic injury of not being noticed or appreciated for coming in. Whatever, and then my reactions to that, you know. And instead of doing that, I was on my game enough, at least, you know, that I could have freedom. That's part of what we do when we release. We release habitual reactions to things. We receive, in a sense, a kind of freedom, a buffer almost, a moving buffer zone between us and reality that gives us choice in that territory. For example.
Did they notice you?
I'm sure they did. I watched it. It was very curious, actually. And after a while, I said something kind of really small, or they glanced at me, and then I said something. And it was just very cool, actually, in a weird kind of way. It's kind of neat when you don't run your normal robotic scripts, in a sense, right? Okay. So how about we give you time to talk with a partner, okay? So as usual, if you don't want to do it, no worries. And we'll pick an A and a B. A's will go first. We'll try to do about 3 minutes each way. And so I invite you just to talk with your partner about what, you know, try to be focused here. You know, what at least is one thing that you'd like to bring intention to for this year with regard to letting go of or releasing or giving out to the world, you know, releasing what's letting go of what's problematic, or offering what would be, you know, beneficial under the heading of releasing. And then under the heading of receiving, you know, what would you like to be more open to that's actual, or even, you know, invite in or call forth that's not yet actual in your life? Do you see the question? And I encourage you, try to be kind of specific and real about this, in a sense. Establish, see if you can find an intention here. Okay, or share with your partner an intention maybe that you've already formed about this year. Okay, you want to do it? So get a partner, spread out, grab a partner if you want to do it. Pick an A and a B. Raise your hand if you don't yet have a partner and want one. Someone wants a partner there. If you want one, feel very free to sit this out, no worries. Okay, pick an A and a B. Okay, good. A's begin for about 3 minutes. What do you want to release? What do you want to receive? Okay. So any reflections? Any reflections?
It wasn't enough time.
I know. It's never enough. Yeah, please.
I wanted to share something that happened for me after I heard you and, you know, Spirit Rock on that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, not self in the brain. Yeah.
And you were talking about this sort of thing that seems rise and fall away.
Yeah.
I was just sharing that I went down to Los Angeles to see my 22-year-old son for Christmas. And I had driven down there for 8 hours. And this was a very different Christmas because usually we were together, the family, after divorce, not yet. So I drove down there, and when I arrived, he wasn't in a very good mood. And he really wasn't that great and receptive to see me, and I was about to stay there. I'd just driven 8 hours, so and we went out shopping at the Grove shop, and he said to me, "You know what, Mom? I don't think this is working out." And I had such a strong, the narcissistic wound of being rejected, the anger. I just drove down here. It's Christmas. Where am I gonna go? Fear. I mean, I was bombarded with this reaction, and then I remember you saying, this is just, like, this is an event, or there's no thing, this is going to rise and fall away. And so I just, and if you could reduce the Buddhist teachings, I think you said, to one thing, which is about letting go. And so I said, okay, man, it's okay. I'm not attached to being the way it was. Let's just get in the car, I'll take you back to your apartment. And I had no idea where I was going to stay or what I was going to do. I was full of anxiety and worry, but I kept thinking what you said. And then on the way back to his home,
be careful about that. But anyway, so far it seems to be helping, but be careful.
Well,
keep going.
We're on Hollywood Boulevard and driving back to his, and I finally looked out the window, and he's grumpy and looking out his window. And we were at a stoplight, and I said, "You know, Ryan, this moment is just going to rise and fall." And I said, "You know, in a sense, it's kind of absurd," I said. "And in fact, I'm not attached. I'm going to let go of it being the way I thought it was going to be, because even that's going to rise and fall away." And I just started laughing. And I said, like, the absurdity of being attached to it being, trying to make Christmas and the whole thing. And I found the humor in it. And I looked over at him, and he was resisting laughing with me. But then finally he joined in. And we both laughed together, and we wound up having this incredible weekend. I did stay there. And it turned out to be different than any other holiday I've ever had with him. But it was so open-hearted and wonderful. And I just want to thank you, because I remembered you in that moment, and I was really able to let go and let it be what it was trying to be, which was not the traditional holiday that I was trying to make. It was great. So I really want to thank you.
Wow, Bass, thank you. Hey. That's great. Thank you. That's very touching to me personally, and a good reminder to me, too. So thank you. That's great. That's great. Other comments, maybe about what you'd like to release or receive for the new year? Including, you know, tanglements with loved ones. Yeah.
I thought about release, in general, you were saying release. I realized release is always, releasing is always finding your next personal freedom. In other words, release is always releasing, release is always finding myself. It's always releasing myself from something.
Yeah, got it.
Always. So if I'm releasing from, as she was saying, it's a personal release, it's a personal freedom. So every release is a personal step. See what I mean?
Yep, yeah, yeah.
That's cool. That's neat. That means kind of that there's some rebuilding of yourself every moment. In other words, it's an event, as you say.
You know, how I think of it is like I let go, and in the very broad sense of the word, I am still here.
Yeah.
There is still being
you're
ongoing.
You're creating yourself into over and over again in the freedom of release of everything or anything.
Yeah.
That's great. What I wanted to say. I had a little experience too about giving, about offerings. I was sharing this with you. Over where I volunteer at Wild Care, I take care of two squirrels on Saturday. On Friday, one of the squirrels bit somebody and drew blood. It's a little brown squirrel with really sharp claws and teeth. So Sunday's not my day to be there, but I thought of a way to prevent that from happening. So I called up and I went up there, it's also at San Jose, and I started telling the people who were going to take care of him on that day what I thought should happen. And then I realized, as the people they were talking, that wasn't a very good idea. So I had to have some personal release there. But then I realized what I was really there to give wasn't the idea. It was like being there to give.
Oh, it's really, yeah.
See what I mean? It was like just being with the other two people, thinking about it, talking about it, the care of the animal, care of each other, of our thoughts. And it was like a whole light leap of what I was giving. And as Trisha said, I was just giving my presence there.
That's great, thank you. I think sometimes, you know, how much we focus on some specific content to offer, you know, but really the offering is our presence, as you say, or our sincerity. The word sincerity really, it's been in my mind a lot the last several years, its importance, and particularly in our culture, I think, which is so much focused on image and manufactured management of image and so forth. Great. Thank you. All right. Hey, maybe one more person, and then we'll move to a wrap.
We were talking about job things too.
Yeah.
And first of all, I realize it's so interrelated because it's giving your contribution, but also then receiving the money or the job or whatever. But I realize for me, I think it comes down to the whole abundance lack dichotomy. And but I can get myself in the abundance mindset and much more open to taking in and releasing because it's not a big deal because there's lots more. So I don't know what that means, but that's always generally where my instruction lies, is when I get into that feeling of lack.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. You know, you've heard me probably talk about how in the three stages of brain evolution, basically, you know, reptile, mammal, primate, the brain evolved evolved ways to meet three needs, you know, avoiding harm, approaching reward, and attaching to us, that are pretty linked to those reptilian, mammalian, primate stages of evolution. And if those needs are not met, it's very difficult not to be stressed and contracted. I think there are rare people who have gotten to a point where if those needs are intensively not met, they can still maintain a lot of equanimity and a lot of wholeheartedness. But for most of us, meeting those needs is an enabling condition for personal healing, ordinary well-being, psychological growth, and spiritual practice. And more broadly even, sanity and peace and prosperity in this planet, right? And so when we come from a prior sense of peacefulness, basic all-rightness, basic calm, basic not at war, in terms of the avoiding harm need, and when we come from a basic sense of contentment, you know, we have enough of enoughness in terms of the approaching reward need, and when we also come from a basic sense of connection, you know, love coming in, love flowing out, in terms of the, you know, attaching to others' needs, we kind of move into a mode, a brain state, and a psychological state that is really a very powerful facilitative condition of personal well-being, healing, and more broadly, benevolence. You know, more broadly, truly, it's the basis for sustaining the making of the offering to others and out into the world. You know, to sustain benevolence to the world, we must first begin with benevolence for ourselves. Right? And so, you know, that's the way I think about that. And I just mentally will even do a little checklist in the morning around peaceful, happy, and loving, and just kind of establish my basic sense of okayness in those departments. And then on the basis of that, go forward into the day. Right? And in other words, that mode of brain is not just, how can I put it, it's the result of those basic needs being met, but it's a way to go about meeting them. We meet our need for safety in this more responsive way. It's less reactive and less contracted. We meet our need for rewards in a fundamentally more contented way. You know, we meet our needs for connection in a more loved and loving way. Right? And on that basis, then, we can receive and release out into the world. To me, it's been a very fundamental architecture as a way to observe where my mind is at any moment and to nourish conditions that in a very grounded and engaged way. Because when we're in this basic state of peacefulness, happiness, and love, just I'm using three words to encompass a lot of stuff, it's a big umbrella, but when we're in that mode, you know, then we're much more able to operate in life. You know, we're engaged in life. We're not in our cave. We're not withdrawn. But we're doing so on a certain basis. And fundamentally, too, when we approach life with a mind that is grounded in a basic fundamental sense of peacefulness, happiness, and love, the factors that create craving are much less present and therefore much less suffering in the Buddhist frame. So for me, this is the, when I think of a brain that's entered a basic state of peacefulness, happiness, and love, that's the foundation for the brain of a Buddha. Or in my own case, a lesser being, but on the path.
Okay. So how do you do that? How do you just kind of see where you are?
Come next week. And well, it's just to kind of check out. For one, do I really need to feel fearful right now? And also, I need to be active to take care of the things that do threaten me or could harm me, like not having work or health insurance, whatever. Or kids that notice me when I walk in my house someday. You know, there's a place for, like I said, to sustain this flow of contribution or benevolence, we must begin by being benevolent to ourselves, taking care of our own basic needs. So we give some thought to that. But in many ways, the mind and therefore the brain can feel fulfilled in terms of these basic needs a lot based on perspective and attitude. Yeah. It's often said that the happiest people in the world on average are the poorest. You know, it's not about material circumstances, particularly above a certain basic threshold. So how about we sit for a minute and then call it a night, okay? So I just invite us all to perhaps take a moment to reflect on that which we'd like to let go of or release. Both things that are problematic and contributions we'd like to make. It can sometimes be more palpable to do this with the exhalation, to focus on releasing while exhaling. Buddha spoke of afflictions upon the mind. What might be an affliction upon your own mind that you'd like to let go of in 2012? And then receiving, maybe with a particular focus on the inhalation as you reflect on specific things that you'd like to be more open to, more softer around, less guarded or braced around, more appreciative of or grateful for. Perhaps certain attitudes or perspectives or intentions that are factors of bringing into being in your life things that are not yet in your life that you wish for. What kind of positive factors of mind would you like to open more to in 2012? Thanks for your practice.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Mm-hmm.